Jen and Cam are two funny ladies who like to talk about murder, mass murder, murder-suicide, serial killers, spree killers, thrill killers, contract killings, honor killings, and a whole lot of other shit. Too heinous for me to list here. If you're disturbed by this sort of content, you may want to listen to something else. And if you're a child trying to listen to our true crime podcast, well, you better ask your mama.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
It is summer. I'm happy as a clam at the beach during summer.
Good for you.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm excited for you.
Yeah, thanks.
You got an episode for us?
I do. So here we go. You ready? Dun, 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 dun. We're going in our very own, would it be our side yard? Our backyard? I don't know. Front lawn. We're going to St. Chuck, St. Charles, Missouri. A local businessman is found shot to death inside his office on June 8th, 2007 by a postal worker. It was about 12:30 in the afternoon when she called 911 and informed the operator that a man had been shot and she thought he was dead. She couldn't quite tell. She was pretty panicked on the phone. As she's on the phone with 911, a police officer drives by and she flags him down. The police officer enters the business and finds the man, and he can tell right away he has a gunshot wound to the head, at least. The man's name was Robert Eidman, and whoever killed him wanted to be sure that he knew exactly who wanted him dead. 48-year-old Bob ran an insurance company and had for years. He catered to clientele, shall we say, that are hard to insure, and other agencies would turn them away. He had run the business for a long time, and all the locals knew him, and he was well-liked. Bob was married to his high school sweetheart named Diane. They began dating in high school, and they just kind of stayed together. Diane would occasionally help him out at the office, but she worked at a nearby hospital, St. John's Mercy. As police continued to investigate the scene, they determined that Bob had been hit actually three times with a 9mm gun. One shot was to his chin, another to his neck, and the final one to his head. That one actually hit. All of these were shot while he was looking at the gun person. That final one went through his left eye and all the way through his head.
Poor guy.
The only thing missing from the scene was Bob's wallet, which led investigators to believe that it was a robbery that had gone wrong. The officer cuts out, which I think is remarkable. This is interesting. Knowing that the wallet was gone, the officer thought about this, which I guess that's why they're police officers and we're not.
Training.
That he cut out the fabric of his pocket in which the wallet would have been, hoping that maybe there'd be some touch DNA there.
Oh, very smart.
Police believe Bob was working in his office when the killer entered and almost immediately shot Bob. An interesting thing to note was that there were live rounds of ammunition on the ground, and this kind of told police officers that either the gun jammed or the person doing the shooting really didn't know what they were doing. You know, it wasn't like they did this all the time. That's what they were guessing at the time. Since the shots were face-to-face, meaning that the person stood over Bob and shot him while looking at him, they believed that the person had to have known Bob. It was too personal for just a random attack, or so they believed. Police start canvassing the area looking for witnesses. They learn that Bob arrived to work that day at around 10 a.m. And since the postal carrier found him at 12:30, this gives them a pretty good window to know when the killing occurred. So it was sometime between 10 and 12:30, 2.5 hour window. As they're talking to people nearby the business, they talk to the company that rents the space underneath the insurance office, underneath his office. And she tells investigators that she heard a ruckus around 11 a.m. that morning. Perfect. Police are now pretty sure that this must have been the time of his murder. As police are investigating, someone arrives at the scene. It was his wife, Diane. She had been trying to call Bob, and when he didn't answer, she drove down to work to check on him. Detectives break the news to her, and of course, you know, they ask her to come to the station. Now, police would say that she had a weird reaction to the news. She didn't break down and cry. She was very calm, which, you know, kind of sends up a few red flags.
Mm-hmm.
Diane tells them the day before they left the office together around 3 p.m. And after that, they went to go drop off business cards at local car dealerships, you know, trying to get some new business. Mm-hmm. When they were finished, they went home. They had dinner around 6, and Bob went to bed around 10:30 that night. Bob woke up the next morning, the day he was killed, and left the house around 9 a.m. And they have him arriving at work at 10. Diane had been at work all day that day. She worked from like 5 a.m. to 2, I believe. So that's when, you know, she called Bob and he didn't answer. So she went down there to check on him. Since she had been at work all day and that was confirmed by her boss, it meant that she was not the one responsible for Bob's death. Or does it? Diane does tell officers that Bob had recently gotten into a pretty bad argument with a man who was also in the insurance business because he had stolen one of Bob's longtime clients. Bob was furious about this. Now, would this man be angry enough to hurt Bob? Not sure. So police know they need to go and talk to the man. They reach out to him, and of course, he is in shock, and he denied having anything to do with Bob's murder. He tells officers that he went to work that day at 10:30 a.m., and he stayed there until he went home at 5. His receptionist would confirm that timeline. So if the murder did occur at 11, this means this man could not have done it. Officers are now back to square one. Investigators need to take a deep look into Bob's business dealings. Now, as mentioned before, Bob's clients were the ones that were too high risk to insure. Now, often this was drunk driving, unpaid tickets, way too many tickets.
Not just drunk driving, but lot of drunk driving tickets.
Well,
a lot of DUIs.
And just things that people, it made them hard to get insured. So due to this fact, Bob dealt mostly in cash, making it even more difficult to figure things out. The long, tedious process of tracking down and clearing all his clients begins one by one. Authorities learned that Bob's business was not really doing all that well. In fact, the franchise was getting ready to revoke his license for the business because he was kind of failing. Now, this would mean that the $160,000 he had initially invested would be gone. They would be broke. While they're doing all this painstaking work, a lead comes in.
And Bob's still alive, correct?
At this point?
Yes.
Well, they're dead. They're dead. He's dead. The police are going to look into stuff.
Okay.
So he's dead, but these are like all the little reasons of what or who could have led to his demise. Bob's office was in a strip mall, and across from it was a small grocery store, which just happened to have a camera at the front door. On the day of the murder, the camera caught something. It wasn't much, but it was something. It showed a car driving past at 10:50 a.m. and then again at 10:54, 4 minutes later. So this time frame works. They want to know if this car could be involved in the murder of Bob. Since the car was simply driving past, they couldn't see a license plate, but they did have an ace up their sleeve. There was an officer on the force whose talent was being able to name a car, any car. He could name a car, truck, make, model. He was usually dead on. He would identify this car as a Ford Focus. Investigators learned that there are over 1,000 registered Ford Focus cars in St. Charles County alone. So they decide to give the footage to the local TV stations and see if anybody might recognize the car and call in a tip. The phone does not ring. They are stuck. They need something else to happen. So they decide they need to go ahead and maybe take another look at Diane. As we have stated how many countless times, often it is the spouse. What was going on?
Especially if they're in financial straits.
Mm-hmm. When Diane was first interviewed, she told them that they did have a life insurance policy on Bob, but it was for only $5,000. When police are investigating her the second time, they discover that there were actually 3 insurance policies on Bob, and the 3...
Forgot about those other 2, didn't she?
That's what she said, Jen. The 3 insurance policies were to the tune of $400,000, and as we know, that $400,000 sure would get Diane out of debt.
Mm-hmm.
So why?
And a little bit more.
Why didn't she tell the officers that there was more than the $5,000? She said she just simply forgot that she had all those policies.
Okay.
Seems like a large thing to forget about, but, you know, okay. Police get into her phone and her computer, and what they're trying to do is find a link. You know, they know that Diane worked that day. They've already cleared that, but that doesn't mean that she's not involved. Possibly, maybe she hired a hitman. That's what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. However, they find something else altogether. They find out that Bob was getting massages on the regular, as in often, as in on his lunch breaks.
Are they special happy time massages?
I think so. I would think these are happy massages. I would think. I'm not sure though. That was a little vague. But
he is under a lot of stress, so his shoulders might be tight.
They might,
but
Yeah. So that was a little vague. This next part is not vague at all. But that wasn't all. Bob had been chatting with someone on the internet, and he was in fact having an affair. With a man we're going to call John. John confirms the story that the two had been seeing each other. They had met up on a dating site. And John also tells them that Bob had recently broke up with him because his wife, Bob's wife, had found out about their little dalliances. And Bob had told John that they needed to lay low for a while. John tells officers that on that day, he was at work all day and his boss did confirm that. John is no longer a suspect. And let me say also, John was from the Kansas City area, so that would
be very difficult for him.
Correct.
Good for a suspect.
Suddenly, the mild-mannered insurance agent is leading a secret life, and this means there may be more than one person out there that would like to harm Bob. Mm-hmm. Once again, maybe Diane knows more than she's saying. Diane comes to the station yet again and tells investigators that she didn't really think the affair was important enough to mention to police. It's not important. That, along with the insurance policies, is making Diane look more and more like she was involved. Even though they may think Diane was involved, they don't have enough to hold her. Little side note here. Apparently, when Diane was a teenager, her mother was charged with killing her father, but went to court and was found not guilty. And so her mom didn't serve any time or anything for that. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean Diane would do that.
It's not looking good for Diane.
So police want Diane to take a polygraph. She complies, but unfortunately, the test would prove to be inconclusive. Finally, a break comes in, and it was in their back pocket all the time. Well, Bob's back pocket. See? Bob's back pocket, right?
I saw it coming.
See it coming, I know. An unknown male's DNA was found and extracted from the pants pocket of Bob. Now, this is where his wallet was stored, if you remember. They cut that out at the murder scene the day he was murdered, or at the crime scene the day he was murdered. Police run the DNA through the national database, and sadly, there is not a hit. They may have the killer's DNA, but they don't have a name. The case goes cold. All they can do is wait and hope. 3 years would pass when the news they had been waiting for comes in. There was a match, and the DNA belonged to a man named Paul White. Paul White had just been sentenced in the Missouri State Pen on a whole different series of crimes. He was doing some time, but not for this. Just happened to be that he was easy to find, shall we say. Investigators pull up his file, and they find out he has a long history of crime. Most notably, he once committed a robbery, and it went sideways. He had shot the victim, but the victim survived. Sounds a little similar to Bob. Police need to find out how Paul White knows Bob, and it doesn't take long. In March 2010, the cops pull over a white Ford Focus driven by a man named Cleo Hines, with Paul White as the passenger. The police at the scene, which I thought was kind of unique, took a routine DNA sample from both men. Odd, a little bit, I thought, but I didn't know that was a thing. But anyway, so the DNA sample goes into the registry. And what kind of car do you think he was driving? That's right, the Ford Focus, the same kind of car that was seen on that camera the day of Bob's murder. It seems that Paul White's wife had purchased a policy from Bob months earlier. Paul, her husband, had been with her when she went in to see Bob and get that insurance policy. When Paul was in there, I guess he made a little note that Bob seemed to have a lot of cash on site and pretty much operated a cash-only business. So police go to the state pen, and they need to have a little chat with Paul White. Paul speaks with police, and his demeanor lets the police know that he thinks he is smarter than they are, and they don't have anything on him. They show Paul a photo of Bob, and at first Paul claims, no, I don't know who he is, doesn't look familiar. So then they show him another photo, and he's like, you know, kind of looks familiar, but I can't really say where I know him from. Now, what they don't know, of course, is that they already have his DNA from the back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul White claims he has nothing to do with Bob's murder. I've no idea. So finally, they say, hey, we have your DNA. We got it off the back pocket where Bob kept his wallet. Well, at this point, Paul is laughing. I mean, he is laughing and saying, that's impossible. That is impossible. He's got his arms up around his head. Like, he is like so relaxed and chill. He is laughing, saying, that's impossible. That's impossible. Is it? I don't think so.
Doesn't sound like it.
Okay, that's fine, Paul. That's fine. We're going to let you go back to your little cell. Have your day. In the meantime, we're going to go have a little chat with your friend Cleo. Now, Cleo tells officers that he and Paul have been friends for a long time, and they're even roommates at one time. Police try a little trick with Cleo. They tell him that they know his car was there that day, and they know he was involved. At this point, they can put Paul on the scene, but they can't Cleo. Oh, unlike Paul, Cleo immediately gives it up. Cleo tells officers that on the day of the murder, Paul had went to a local casino and had lost big time there, around $1,200. Paul then comes to Cleo and asks him to help commit a burglary of this guy he knows named Bob. Cleo also tells officers that Paul threatened to kill him if he didn't go along with the plan. So that's simply why Cleo went along with the plan. He didn't want to do it, Jen. He did not want to do it. He was scared of Paul. Okay? So that's why he was, you know, hornswoggled into going. When they go to the insurance company, Cleo says he dropped Paul off, and Cleo simply waited in the car. Paul went inside to commit the robbery, comes back, gets in the car, and then informs Cleo that, I had to shoot the man. I think he's dead. Cleo said Paul shot Bob because Bob knew Paul, could identify him, because Paul had been there with his wife getting that insurance policy. Okay, they got pretty much all they needed. They just need Paul to give up the goods. With this information, they go back to Paul and they tell him that his buddy Cleo told them everything. At first, Paul admits nothing. I don't know what you're talking about. He's lying. He's not giving it up. Well, when they finally tell him everything that they have, that cocky demeanor he had earlier, that goes to the wayside. And he admits that he was involved. But, Jen, he points the finger back to Cleo.
Of course Paul he does.
Paul said he was the one that, in fact, took the wallet, but it was actually Cleo who did the shooting. He just wanted the money. He didn't want to murder Bob. Now, in Missouri, as in many states, it doesn't matter who pulled the trigger. You're both equally guilty of murder. So Cleo Hines was charged with second-degree murder and second-degree robbery. Believing that Paul White, this is authorities and the prosecutor, believed that he was actually the one that pulled the trigger, he's charged with first-degree murder and first-degree robbery. Both men are sentenced to spend the rest of their lives behind bars. Cleo Hines is currently serving at Potosi Correctional Center right down the road, while Paul White is serving his sentence at Jefferson City Correctional Center. Now, a few little things to add here, which, I don't know, you can't make this stuff up. Initially, the duo, their plan was to go to Walmart and just rob people at random, but they decided against it since Walmart has security cameras. See the irony there, since the security camera at the grocery store is the one that caught him or helped catch him? The total amount that Cleo and Paul would get from that wallet, you ready? $200. That's it. $200. After not being able to find all that cash that Bob had, they didn't want to leave empty-handed, so they took Bob's wallet. Now, police would later say that they really, and it happens a lot, and I kind of led it this to believe it this because I wanted to, but they weren't very good to Diane.
No, but, and neither was I, and I apologize about that.
But that happens all the time. The spouse does do it. And, like, I don't know how you would forget about insurance policies, but maybe, you know, they got them a long time ago. They were married for a long time. They didn't have children. They were high school sweethearts and got married and were married for years. But a police, I mean, a detective, an investigator, their job is to solve the crime. So,
well, and you usually, most crimes occur with people that you know.
Exactly.
Like, this, or close to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This wasn't a random, but it was a random kind of, you know? If his wife had not bought a policy there, it would have been much harder to solve, I think.
Well, he probably wouldn't have known.
Or the DA.
To go there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. I mean, Bob wouldn't have been on his radar at all no. if his wife hadn't bought insurance there.
I did think it was odd, though, that the to pull over somebody. Like, if I got pulled over and they asked me for a DNA swab, I'd, why? That's
yeah.
bizarre.
Not without a lawyer. Thank you very much.
Yes. So that is the story, sad, sad story of the murder of Bob Eidman.
Well, once again, my apologies to Diane. Well, that was very uncool of me to do.
But again, you know, 400,000.
You let me.
I let me go on. I did. I led you down that path on purpose. Kind of. Because you just think about, like, if this wouldn't have, like, with no DNA, she might have been convicted of the crime, you know, and served time. And she didn't do it. But I think her demeanor, they thought was odd. But again, that doesn't make you a killer. People nope. just are strange sometimes. So
nope. And then leaving out key things like an affair, which she probably didn't want to get out in the first place. She was probably embarrassed.
I would say that. She was embarrassed and just thought, well, they don't need to know. He didn't do it. But how would you not know? Like, if you found out your spouse was having an affair and then your spouse was murdered, wouldn't one of your go-to be that person that he was cheating with? Especially
so.
If you found out and you kind of made your husband break it off. I think that would be a great person to start with.
Yeah. I don't know. We don't know her reasonings, but
wow.
Very nice. I don't even remember this happening at all.
Oh, either.
This was about the time.
This is right when I moved back to Missouri, I think.
I had two young babies about this time, so I wasn't paying attention to anything except the babies.
Your whole world changes with that, let me tell you. You've been watching anything good lately?
Finished Stranger Things.
I finished that started it.
On the way from vacation. I liked it. It was very good. I'm excited for the final two episodes to come out. There was kind of like a little nod. I don't even want to say it, but a little nod to a Stephen King novel in there.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can say movie. It was a movie too. Most of his books are. It was really good. I enjoyed it immensely.
Hmm.
I liked it. Binged it on the way back.
Nice. I haven't even started
you?
It. I haven't started it. I watched, well, if you know me, I've run out of stuff to watch. Like, I do have to watch Stranger Things, but to me, that's a binge kind of, and I need to dedicate hours to it. I think that kind of show you need to do that. And I just haven't had time lately. But I did watch Billy the Kid, and I think I have a new crush on Billy the Kid, the actor that plays Billy the Kid. He's cute.
And who's that?
Kind of a nobody. His name is, I think, Tom Blythe, I think is how you say his last name. But at first, I was like, he just grows on you in the character, you know?
Is this new? Is this a new
it's on,
thing?
It's on a weird channel. Yeah, I think it's on Epex, E-P-E-X or something. I got it off Amazon. But it's good. It's good. It's a story of, I don't know, it's a good story. And it is kind of funny sometimes those old stories like that. Like, you hire this cute kid and have him play Billy the Kid. And like, the story, you can tell it over and over. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I watched Clifton Hills, Clifton Heights, something like that.
Oh.
I can't even remember it. That's how good it tells you.
Right. Yeah. I started that and didn't. I only watched about 15 minutes and I was like, oh, this is
so Clifton much. Hill, I guess. No, nothing. And I mean, like, it got a 5 out of 10 out of.
Oh.
It's not that great, but that's about all. Like I said, we just got back from vacation. We had a great time. That's always fun when relaxing vacation, when you get your 10,000 steps in by noon.
That's not a vacation to me.
It was fun. But one thing that's, I always forget, being in the Midwest, we don't, in St. Louis, we don't encounter a lot of
beach
people from other, visitors from other countries, right?
Oh, mm-hmm.
And in Florida, it's like almost a mecca for international travelers, which is understandable. There's so much to do down there. So in our resort that we're at, to get to the Orlando, you would take a boat, like a ferry, and it would take you to and from. And you'd wait in your line, you know, the boat holds 40 people, everybody crams in, it's like a not even 10 minutes, maybe 5 to get to and from, whatever. I'm going back, I'm by myself, the kids and my husband want to ride all the really big rides that I can't stand. So I'm just like, there's no sense of me just sitting there waiting for you. I'm just going to go back to the hotel. So I get on the ferry by myself and it's pretty packed. A family of three come on and the parents sit together and then they have a little kid who's under 10, probably about 8 years old, little boy. They put him by me and then they sit together, which I thought was kind of odd, but who am I to say? Well, the little boy looks terrified to be by himself and he like keeps looking at his parents. You know what I mean?
Like he's sitting by.
Yeah. I mean, it's terrible. So me being a mom and talkative, I try to start talking to him and try to calm him down. Did you have fun? Did you go to the park today? What was your favorite ride? And he's staring at me like I have three heads. And
he's not answering you?
He's not answering me at all. And he's just like looking at me and it looks like he's getting scared. And he keeps looking at his parents and they're smiling at him, give him the thumbs up, you know, like. So finally, I just quit talking, right? Because it's not, we don't have much. I just quit talking. He looks
terrified. You don't have anything in common with your new friend.
No, we get off the boat. He's French. He doesn't understand a word I'm saying. That's what I'm assuming anyway, because his parents, after he gets off, they start speaking and they're speaking French. So poor kid, this strange, sweaty woman was next to him talking in a language he didn't quite understand.
Aw, yeah. Little cutie. So,
then I felt really bad. But the look on his face was not only priceless, but it was terrifying.
Oh, boy. Well,
yeah. So
welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida. We did stop at a Buc-ee's. It was the first time ever going to a Buc-ee's. My word, it's huge. It's a huge, I swear it's like 5 football fields big.
I think it's like, 3. In that video you sent me, I think it's 3 football fields.
Yeah, there's like 100 gas pumps, if not more. It was overwhelming. They have a beef jerky bar.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was overwhelming.
Did you get the Buc-ee swimsuit and the Buc-ee shoes?
We did not. No, I was very tempted. I was tempted, but
Buc-ee one piece would just look.
And honestly, it was packed. So packed. It was unbelievable how busy it was.
I wouldn't say that's a destination for vacation, but I guarantee that is a destination that every vacationer stops by on purpose.
You have to experience it. You have to experience a Buc-ee's. Seriously. Wow. We stopped on the way to Florida to get gas. Then on the way home, we stopped to get breakfast. And they have like your all sorts of breakfast foods. They have pulled pork sandwiches and tacos and all that stuff during the day. But in the morning, they have your breakfast sandwiches that, you know, you can get like you get
yummy
at McDonald's. Right. But I swear to, it was packed and there's so much and it is overwhelming. Everything has, it's all Buc-ee's branded. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do have some chips that were regular, but it's Buc-ee's branded. It was, you have to experience it.
And I like that the one guy, it's he and his silent partner that own it. It is not a huge corporation. It is legit 2 men that own it. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, gas was kind of cheap. Believe it or not, you can get a 5-pint bag of ice for 69 cents.
Oh,
something. I mean,
bigger's better.
It's just bigger's better,
right?
I think it was a 5-pound. I don't know. I just
it was a
thinking,
bag of ice.
Damn, it was 69 cents. But yeah, it was something. If you're ever coming down south, stop at a Buc-ee's. It's amazing. Overwhelming, in fact.
Where are you going to vacation this year? Buc-ee's.
We're going to Buc-ee's, but it was funny. Fun.
Right.
Yeah, that's about it. What about you? Anything else?
Well, Jen, I am subbing for summer school. And let me just say for the record, that TV show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? No, no, I am not. Math is not my friend. And it's 2 things I realized on Friday. Number one, they were taught division a whole different way. So when I'm up there all showing off how to do it, they're like, that's not right. And I was like, what do you mean that's not how we do it? I said, how do you do it? I didn't know there was another way. And then also, there was a problem. Again, now, mind you, these boys, there's 4 of them, are going into the fifth grade. They're going into fifth grade, okay?
Right. And don't forget that you were teaching what class? A robotics class, right?
No, that was the other day. That was my first day. This was Friday.
Okay.
Friday was it's math. And that's what I do tomorrow. Same class.
Okay.
So I had to bring home the worksheet to have my teenager show me how to do this because it's embarrassing. But, you know, do I need to convert decimals to fractions anymore? No. When was the last time I did that? Probably high school. When I was in high school, I have no. So anyway, I was like, okay, you guys, hey, you know what? We're gonna skip this one. We'll come back to it on Monday. That's because I did not know how to do it, and I got to look it up. It's terrible. But if you want to write a 20-page term paper, I got you. I got you. But fifth grade math, no.
Mm-mm. No.
Nope. Can't do it. So anyway.
Yeah. No. Math is magical. I don't understand it either. That's my husband, you know, they're teaching, like, everybody calls it the new math or Singapore math or whatever it's called. It's easy for my husband because that's how he's always done it in his head, even though he was taught the same way we were, you know, put it in columns and everything. Every time a girl's had a math problem, I'm just like, talk to your dad. And now that they're both in high school, it's always just like, just ask your dad. If I can't find it on Google, you're going to have to ask your dad.
Also, I did robotics. That was easy. However, Jen, you're going to love this. In the middle of the month, I am a middle school gym teacher. And to fit the part, I bought some tube socks, gym shorts. I bought a t-shirt from our alma mater, Union High School.
Now, did you buy the gym shorts with the white banding?
Yes, I did.
To be like that.
And
which they're actually coming back in style.
Headband and sweatbands. And the headband and the armbands, whatever those things. Those are really tight. But my theme is red, white, and blue because why not? And then, you know, the shirt from our high school, of course, is red and black. But it'll go with the motif. I think it's okay.
Well, nice. Oh, I think it's hilarious, but the kids are going to think you're dumb. But that's okay.
Complete with the whistle. Complete with
the
whistle.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Got a red whistle.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Oh, red whistle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just thought it was funny.
What are you going to have them play?
I'll have to do whatever they tell me. Oh. I'm subbing for somebody. I don't know, but I will not be running. So there's that.
No, come on.
I know. You're shocked.
Say it ain't so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so far, they've got you pegged. They've got you down with the
math,
athleticism.
Robotics, gym. I know.
Yeah. They're saying, I know what Cam's good at, and this is what we're going to keep her away from. So we're going to put her in robotics.
Mm-hmm. A gym. If there's a dodgeball, I'm running the other direction.
Fifth graders are still kind of sweet, though.
Middle school, I'm not a middle school teacher. I teach high school. In fact, I teach seniors. That's all I've ever had. So I'm used to 17 and 18 years old, and you can be sarcastic and you can kind of goof around with them. And these little peewees are the cutest little things ever. And let me just say, tiny. Mm-hmm. I don't ever remember being that tiny. They're so cute. I love them. So, and they're just sweet, but you can't, like, it's hard for me to suppress my personality, my humor. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, because it's, you know, so yeah, I try to keep that in check because a lot of them don't get sarcasm and they don't get jokes or anything like that yet, right? It's very.
Neither do their parents, so, but that's a different story. That's a different episode.
Yes, it is. So that's
good. I'm glad you're having fun at summer school.
Yeah, it's funner school. That's what I kept calling it Friday.
Funner school.
They're like, what? What? It's summer school. I'm like, I know, but it's funner. So it's funner school. And they're like, what? So yeah, they're cute. So
give it to the English teacher with the great grammar.
That's right. That's right, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's about it for me. I bought some plants yesterday. Go me. I forgot that I had to water them until I looked outside and I was like, oh yeah, I gotta water those suckers.
Gotta water those?
I'll probably forget.
It helps.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They'll die in the next 2 or 3 weeks. That's fine.
Probably.
My oldest daughter got a job. That's kind of exciting. She just turned, the day she turned 16, she started filling out forms for places to work.
Oh,
which
boy.
Shocked me. I never wanted to work, but she's like all up and
what's she gonna do with all her money?
I don't know. We told her to put it back. Steve and I kind of we're kind of wondering how long it's gonna last, but actually, to be quite honest, we kind of want her not to work during school. It'd be easier.
Well, or
especially when she's in marching band. She loves it. She's having today's her fourth day, and she absolutely loves it. And she works a drive-through. And so she comes home. What she does is she asks everybody permission for their picture if they have a dog. So if a dog comes to the drive-thru, she asks, can I take a picture of your dog?
Aww.
So she comes home and she shows me all the pictures of the dogs that she's taken.
She should do that. That is cute. She should. Well, that is adorable.
I know. It is. It's cute. It's really cute.
We should do like the dogs of drive-thru.
Dogs of the drive-thru. Yeah. It's fun. She loves it. She has a blast, which is... I'm thrilled beyond belief. Believe me, when she told me she had a job, I'm like, you're kidding me. And especially fast food. And there's nothing wrong with working fast food. But as a teenager, I wouldn't have done that. I mean, I was a snotty teenager, a snotty adult.
To be fair, you did serve popcorn at the Palace at Six Flags.
I did, in my little scooter skirt.
Yep.
And that was so hard. I worked 15 minutes out of every hour in the air conditioning.
Yeah, I didn't.
But anyway, no, it's good. Summer so far is good. I will let you know in about a week whether it still is.
Yeah, it's still young. So, there's still time for it to turn. Still time for it to take a turn. Oh, boy.
So, anyway, well, that's all I got.
That's all I got. Do we have any promos? I was going to say promotions.
Yes, today we have a preview from our friend Tara Saraban, and her podcast is called The World's Dumbest Criminals.
Mm, boy, there are some, too, funny, let me tell you.
Ooh. Funny show. Tara's hilarious. Totally like and subscribe. You'll love her.
I will. I will do that right after we get off here.
Good. Good. You should. She's funny.
Until then, Jen, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Do you love listening to true crime podcasts, but could do with hearing something a bit lighter as well? I'm Tara Saraban, host of World's Dumbest Criminals podcast. It's a show all about the most ridiculous and bizarre true crime stories from around the globe. World's Dumbest Criminals is available on iTunes and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Make sure you subscribe if you don't want to miss any criminally stupid shenanigans.